On this episode of the Tech Stack, we're diving into Samsung's XR announcement this week, Apple's updates to Vision Pro, just about all things VR, MR, and XR. Don't change this bat channel. Hi, everyone. This is Mark Bina with Smart Tech Research. I'm the CEO and principal analyst there. I'm here with Marco Ciappetta with Hot Tech. I'm also with Jim McGregor from Tyrus Research. It's going to be a great call because it's going to be a fun call. We're talking about all things that are XR and VR related. So specifically, we're going to be talking about what Samsung did this week with their new XR announcement. Kind of intriguing from the strategy standpoint that they're going down. Apple made some enhancements to Vision Pro a couple of weeks ago when they announced their new iPhone. That didn't get a lot of attention, frankly, you know, and I think part of that is because Vision Pro has not lit the world on fire. We'll get into that. And of course, you know, Meta has been, they've got a partnership with Ray-Bans. They've been doing some things in the glasses space, which I think is are interesting, probably has a better shot, frankly, of becoming more mainstream than some of the other things we're talking about. But let me start with Marco. Marco, you know this category quite well. Let's just talk about strategy first. I mean, the announcement that Samsung had was an online announcement. It was at 7 o'clock at night out here in Las Vegas. But I did watch the entire piece. I know you read my article. I'm sure both of you read my article that kind of diving deep into what I think was pretty well. And of course you do. You know, at least I have one person who reads my stuff. My family will never read my stuff. But let's talk about the strategy stuff first. What did you notice about the Samsung approach to this new XR solution versus what Apple's doing? I mean, from my impression, right off the bat, it's a less expensive solution, which no matter what people says, this category is about price, you know, and, you know, $35.99, which is where Apple has been sitting for quite some time. Is a very, you know, only guys like Jim can afford that kind of stuff, tech down. Ha, ha, ha. But seriously, I mean, it's not it was never intended to be a mainstream product. It was a developer product, yada, yada, yada. But Marco, let's just start there in terms of what things jumped out at you from a different standpoint.
So I think there's, you know, there's two parts to the strategy. And since you mentioned the price of the Vision Pro, I think that's a very intentional thing that Apple's doing. But if you contrast the Apple Vision Pro to the new Galaxy XR, they really couldn't be more different, in my opinion. So the Galaxy XR was co-developed with Google and Qualcomm, and it's using the Android XR platform. So that's an open ecosystem. It's a, you know, multi-company collaboration, which is in stark contrast to Apple, right? Apple is known for their walled garden. They keep everything tightly vertically integrated from, you know, the software all the way through the hardware. And, you know, which approach is better? I think you have strong arguments for both sides. I'm a proponent of more open platforms, but there's no denying that the experience and often the performance is better on Apple's platforms just because everything is so tightly integrated. But you also mentioned pricing, right? I think Apple intentionally prices the Vision Pro so high to keep it sort of laser focused on their most loyal fans or only a smaller group of people because they know this is early days. They don't want it to go wide just yet. They want to work out all the kinks and get it right. Now, whether or not they pull that off is up for debate. I personally think the HMD approach will never go wide. I think just the big, bulky head-mounted displays are really only for niche applications. But, you know, that's just what I think. What about you, Mark? You think I'm off track here?
No, I don't think you're off track. I think what I struggle with is that, first of all, Apple can't have it both ways. You know, Apple can't say, well, this is an important product. We want lots of people to buy it. Yet we're going to price it so high that, you know, if you're a guy who's making $40,000 a year, you probably can't afford it. So I struggle with that. And God knows, Marco, I think that may be the thinking at Apple. Having said that, I think Apple's big mistake, and I don't know whether Samsung is going to fall into this area and make the same type of mistake. Apple tried to position, if you recall the opening announcement of Vision Pro last year, they really spent a lot of time showing use case models that are just were impossible. For example, they showed someone on a plane with Vision Pros. Can you imagine being on a plane with that? First of all, there's the battery life issue. The battery only lasts a few hours. That's number one. Number two is I'm not sure. They even showed people using on the subway, if I recall. There's some B-roll showing that. To me, that's just an absolutely, especially if you're traveling in the New York City subway, you would not want to take a $3,600 product that's on your head on the train in New York. That's probably never going to happen. I think Samsung is going to approach this in a much more mainstream type of way. There was some usage models that Apple has shown off that I think are interesting. For example, you know, if you're a Mac guy, and by the way, I think Marco is right. This is a walled garden challenge between Apple and Samsung vis-a-vis its relationship with Google and Android. I think there's some practical applications. I mean, if you're in a hotel room, for example, and I want to take my display for my MacBook and put it up into a virtual manner, and all of a sudden, you know, have what looks like a 90-inch display in front of me. You know, for those of us who do a lot of video content creation, which all of us do, that's a big deal. Now, does that appeal to the average person? Probably no. You know, so I don't know. I think the thing that I'd like to get Jim to respond to in a second is that the whole walled garden approach kind of drives me a bit crazy. Now, that's been the Apple deal forever. The thing that I get kind of upset with, and by the way, I was one of the early people that got an early chance to play with. I still have it. It's in a closet somewhere, my Vision Pro, and it's been for about a month, which tells you a lot about where things have ended up. You know, you cannot use the Samsung XR headset with an iPhone. You have to have an Android phone to use it from an app standpoint. Well, and the same thing is true, by the way, with Apple. You know, you cannot use an Apple Vision Pro with an Android phone. So all of a sudden, you know, if you're either Samsung or Apple, you're walking away from half the market. So I struggle with that. I want to get Jim's reaction to that.
You know, I would agree that the walled garden approach isn't the best one, but you have to wonder what the ultimate strategy of these companies really is. And, you know, like we saw with HTC, when they first came out with the Viber, I think it was the second generation, they were actually giving them away with handsets. And that may actually be the eventual strategy that we see with these companies, where it's part of a platform that they're selling together, or, you know, as a group rather than as an individual solution. So, I mean, I don't like the walled garden. I've never been an Apple fan for that reason. But it seems like, you know, everyone's trying to push towards that direction. And I think eventually we're going to see business strategies shift for these devices. And I would completely agree with Marco. I don't think that the full head mount display is ever going to be a huge market. I think that you either have VR or you have AR. And the AR has to be a small, light form factor that you can wear anywhere, anytime, with longer battery life. And the VR is really going to be that confined environment and used for specific applications, like retraining people that have had brain injuries, or, you know, actually having, you know, that virtual game environment, something like that. You know, it's going to be a very specific usage model. And I don't think we've seen enough of that yet, really, for the VR side. And let's face it, the AR stuff is still improving. I mean, you have to improve battery life. You have to improve the display technology. You have to improve the chipsets to make them more efficient. I mean, it's a long evolution to get there. But I think AR is really the ultimate solution.
So, Marco, because you're a hardware guy, you like to play with products, you review them all the time. You know, one thing that Apple does, and one of the reasons why their product, a product like Vision Pro, is $3,600, is that they do use premium materials. You know, and you know, one of the knocks against Vision Pro, and even the enhanced one, is not really any different because it's largely the same product. They enhance the ASIC, and it's used there's an M5 in it, if I'm not mistaken. Now, that's a lot of horsepower. You know, but the thing about the Vision Pro that drove me crazy, and why it's sitting in the box behind me, is that it's a very
heavy. Is that the only thing that drove you crazy, Mark? I just want to make sure. Sorry, go ahead.
I could say something sarcastic, and I won't do that. But the thing about the Vision Pro, it makes it challenging, especially if you were going to use it outside your home. And by the way, you know, if you've played with Vision Pro, and I encourage people to go to an Apple store and just play with it, because it really is, you know, from an immersive experience standpoint, you put those things on, you think you're in a different world, because it completely seals out reality from the outside world. It's very, very heavy. And if you wanted to watch a motion picture on it, which was another possible potential users model that Apple promoted, you would probably get, your head would probably fall into your lap after about 20 minutes because it's so heavy. So now that's one of the things that apparently Samsung has addressed, because apparently the new, their XR models are apparently lighter. I haven't played with them yet. You know, I'm sure maybe if, Marco, if you get your hands on it, certainly I'm going to try to get my hands on one. That will be a big, big benchmark difference from just a comfort standpoint. But let's talk a little bit about just ergonomics and design. You know, and I know you haven't had a chance, Marco, yet to actually play with the Samsung models. But do you think that's an important attribute that's going to help contribute, get some momentum behind the category, just the product design?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. They're over and above the aesthetics, right? The comfort. You're not wearing these things for 2 minutes, right? Most people, if you're going to use it, it's for an extended period, right? So if I might not get the exact numbers right, but the Apple Vision Pro is like 750 to 800 grams, not including the external battery packs. And the Galaxy XR is 545 grams, again, not including the external battery packs and the tether. So that is actually a huge weight difference. Now, depending on your posture, your seating area, you can get by, right, with the longer the head-mounted display. I've seen people do it. But if you're going to stick something on your head, right, that's going to be weighing you down in a particular direction, if it's, you're going to be heating up, you're going to have pressure around, you know, your eye sockets on the back of your head, it has to be comfortable, right? If you're going to be in there for a few hours, if you're going to be in that virtual reality for a few hours, all of that design, all of those materials matter. That's, you know, I haven't experienced the Galaxy XR. It does look sleeker. It's definitely lighter. I did have the old Galaxy XR that worked with the Note phones. And Samsung did a decent job with the ergonomics even way back then. So I'm fairly confident the Galaxy XR is going to be comfortable. It's going to feel premium. One area, now this is for me personally, not everybody's going to be affected the same way. With the early XR or VR headsets, I was affected by like the motion sickness because the display quality and refresh rates weren't there. Apple does have a distinct advantage there where the Vision Pro goes up to 120 hertz and the Galaxy XR is only 90 hertz. 90 hertz should be enough for most people. It's once you're sort of in that 60 hertz or below range where it can negatively impact more people. The higher the refresh rate, the better. Higher the resolution, the better. They're both above 4K resolution. So, when the displays are that close to your eyes, that's okay. But that refresh rate is a distinct advantage for Apple. In terms of which one, you know, is going to succeed in that regard, I can't really say without trying the Galaxy XR. I suspect it's going to be pretty close. But most users would prefer the lighter headset that Samsung has produced.
Yeah. Now, Jim, you know, Marco alluded to this, and I think it's an important discussion point, is the role that Qualcomm has played. And Qualcomm is not your typical silicon provider. You know, when they team up with companies, they really team up. I mean, they provide lots and lots of assistance to their OEMs, not just on the chip, the chip component itself, but the integration, the software optimization. I think that's certainly true. They, you know, Qualcomm has had a great relationship with Google forever. And, you know, every time I've gone to a Samsung announcement or had a Samsung briefing, Samsung is very, very transparent about their relationship with Qualcomm. So they're using that new Snapdragon chip, which, you know, I haven't seen the benchmark numbers yet, but I suspect it's going to give Apple's M5 a run for the money, frankly, in terms of pure performance. But talk to me a little bit about just the relationship, why the relationship between Qualcomm and Samsung is so important vis-a-vis the relationship with Google as well, and why this is going to play such an essential role in this, just not with just this product, but with future versions of this solution.
Well, Qualcomm has kind of been a leader in wearables overall, and it's not just the XR, VR, AR solutions, but even on smartwatches, on other types of wearable solutions, they've really focused on trying to create different types of platforms for different types of wearables. And that's probably the most important part. You look at their XR2, obviously the Galaxy solutions are using the XR2 Plus, so it's using the latest version, highest performance solutions that Qualcomm can bring to the platform at with the latest process technology and everything else. However, you look at what they've done for VR and it's completely different. They actually have a multi-chip solution where it's broken up between different parts of the glasses. So it fits that form factor and that type of usage model. So, I mean, more than anything, Qualcomm keeps altering its products in terms of what it includes, but also how it packages it for the right type of application. So, I mean, that they are, you know, other than Apple doing their own complete solution, they are kind of the leader in this industry. And other, it's not just Samsung using Qualcomm, it's other headset vendors using Qualcomm for that very reason. But,
you know, it's really
I have a question for you. You know, and I agree that the form factor and everything is really important, but have either of you really seen content that makes you want to use it over and over again? I mean, I'll admit it's kind of fun using it once or twice for a particular application like meditation or as little games that they've come out with and stuff like that, but I haven't found it that compelling.
You must be reading my mind, because there is an application, I'll get to Marco in a second, that I thought, just given some of the news that's happened in the last 24 hours, could be entertaining with all this scandal stuff surrounding the NBA. If you recall, you know, Apple, I don't know whether they shipped it or not, but they had a kind of a, I think they showed off a application using Vision Pro where you could be watching an NBA game in a virtual reality type of manner where the players are all VR characters running around the court, and you could get angles that you couldn't possibly get watching on TV or being there at the game. Someone said, you know, it would be interesting now with all this gambling stuff going around with the NBA. It would be helpful to have an application to determine if the player is actually on the take and is he faking injuries. So maybe the betting apps will get into that kind of technology. But no, Jim, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think there's been a lot of, oh, I got to have these applications, it's going to change my mind. You know, I mean, I refer over and over again. I really thought, and I said this at the time, you know, where is that Lotus 1-2-3 kind of app that's going to show up in the XR category that says, you know what, I don't care about the cost. I have to have that app because I can't do something, whether it's entertainment related or productivity related, without having this device. And it really hasn't happened. I mean, Apple does ship this interesting dinosaur app, which to show off the chops of the graphics processing. And it's truly unbelievable. I mean, I tell people to go to Apple stores all the time, it's worth it just to see the demo where, you know, you all of a sudden you think you're on a prehistoric planet with dinosaurs, and the dinosaurs look like they're about to jump through the screen and gobble you up. And you can also almost feel them breathe on you. But is that worth spending, you know, $3,600? Is that going to be worth, spending $1,800 for the Samsung XR, the new Samsung XR model? I don't think so. Marco?
Yeah, no, I don't think that the value's there, but I'm going to give two use cases where I personally think that's important. So like with the Apple Vision Pro specifically, the screen mirroring that you mentioned earlier, Mark, not in terms of just having the larger virtual display, but for security reasons. Like I have, my office has windows behind me. If I am doing something sensitive for a client, I think it's actually not a bad idea to throw the virtual display. Nobody can see anything but you, right? And you can get work done completely. You know you're completely private and no one can be shoulder surfing and seeing what's happening on your display. The second thing, and again, this is going to be personal. I love movies. I'm happiest on my couch with the new movie and just, you know, enjoying it. So for something where being more immersed like I'm a big fan of the Marvel movies, superhero movies, to have, you know, that big display and to feel like you're in it, that's also fun. But again, like, I don't think that sells an $1,800, $3,500 head mounted display, but I can see like lots of folks, once they experience that, enjoying it.
Yeah.
But Mark, I do also, I want to just challenge one point you made talking about performance of M5 versus the Snapdragon chip in the Galaxy. The M5 chip has significantly more resources on it. I think on a per core basis, Qualcomm's right there. But in terms of total resources, the M5 is actually a beast. That thing's looking really powerful.
And by the way, I think I saw Dave peering through your window behind. So maybe
he definitely checks up on me.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, that's not. Don't call the police. That's not a prowler.
I asked that question because I can envision applications that I'd like to see, and they're not there yet. Yeah. You know, and actually one of them, my sons gave to me because they're students. They're like, I would love to have it if I could have a wall size, type of display where I've got all these different applications and I can pull them down and I can create that virtual environment and I can interact with it, like I would my PC. And I can actually do that in a multimodal fashion. That would be really cool. If I can use it like a computer with the resources of a workstation or multiple servers or whatever. The other one would be, and Marco, going back to your superhero thing, I want Iron Man, man. I want that holographic capability. I want to be able to look through this and have a 3D image and be able to spin it around and flip it over and look at something physically, in that 3D type of solution. And I know we're getting there. I know that we've... Airbus is working on solutions specifically for their technicians, so they can go into a plane. They know exactly what part they need, where they need to put it, and what order they need to put it in, and stuff like that. But I don't think we've really gotten there for the average user to actually, use it in that kind of, create that new usage model. We haven't created that yet, and that's what I want to see. I want to see that content.
Right. Absolutely. Well, let's pivot before we kind of sign off here. Let's kind of pivot to the less expensive categories, the AR wearable glasses that you see Meta have been doing with Ray-Ban for the last couple of years. I've played with them as well. They're not inexpensive. They're not $99 glasses, but they certainly do that category of smart glasses really solves the problem that a lot of people have with with these wearable devices, and I think both of you would agree with that, you don't want to be conspicuous. You don't want to be walking down the street and someone pointing at you saying, hey, that person has smart glasses on. Now, there's some interesting usage models. There's the ability to take phone calls. I mean, I've played with the Ray-Ban, the Meta Ray-Bans, and they're actually pretty cool in terms of taking the call. The acoustics are pretty good. The microphone placement is actually pretty good. Not sure, playing back music is... kind of sort of okay, maybe not as good as using AirPods or some other type of capability. You can on some of these models, you can take images and videos, which raises the creepiness factor that I think a lot of people get concerned about. But Mark, they're certainly more affordable, and they certainly have a greater potential for becoming mainstream. So Marco, let me pivot to you and get your take on that category in terms of its potential and those kind of usage models that might, again, may broaden the appeal.
Yeah, I think that category is really the future, in my opinion, for the mass market. Like I said, I think the head-mounted displays, they're going to have their niche, but the augmented reality glasses are the way to go. And now, generalizing about the Meta Ray-Bans and similar products, there's kind of a broad range there. There's some that are just sort of like earbuds with camera attached. But then there's more advanced models like the Meta Ray-Ban displays that do have a projected display in the glass. I think that category, they're bigger, they're bulkier, they have less battery life today, which is the huge downside. But as the technology advances and things move forward, I think that's where most people are going to land, because they're eventually going to just look like any other pair of glasses, any other pair of sunglasses, perhaps even, with prescriptions in there. but you'll have that ability to project onto the glass and augment reality, plus have all of the other benefits like a built-in AI agent, video recording, auto recording, taking calls. Like then it really becomes an inconspicuous assistant. And I think that has mass broad market appeal versus, you know, the bigger, bulkier solutions today.
And Marco, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, the advantage of Meta's approach is that they're not locked into the Apple or the Android ecosystem. You can use that if you're an Apple user. You could use those if you're a Google Android user. So that's an advantage from an appeal standpoint. You know, and I, you know, to Jim's point, who doesn't like ecosystems, I think that might broaden the appeal because you can use those products with whether you're an Apple user or whether you're a Google Android user.
Yeah, one additional distinction, though, I think as there's more compute eventually going on all these devices, you want them to handle, you know, for latency purposes and user experience, you want them really handling lots of the compute and processing, and less happening on the companion device. So the as long as you can interface with other devices, that's great. But like, you know, going out into the future, you want all of the compute and the resources in the device to have the best experience. And we're a ways off, obviously.
Yes.
But that's if I am looking into my crystal ball and I see a product that, you know, the mass market wants, that's it. It's the inconspicuous, high performance, really useful, highly integrated glasses sort of setup.
So, Jim, as we close this out, any remaining thoughts? I mean, it sounds like, you know, you've got tremendous expertise in the silicon ingredient stuff. You've talked about some really interesting things that both Qualcomm and others do to make their products really, really appealing for a variety. You know, they try to be a utility player. They try to create silicon that fits in a variety of different product wearable categories because one size does not fit all. But as we kind of sign off on this episode, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I would just like to say that I do agree that I think AR is the ultimate solution, and it's not a single source solution. I think it is, like Marco said, it works with all these different devices. It works with my smartwatch. It works with the puck or the smartphone that's in my pocket. Quite honestly, you know, I really hope that we get to a point where I'm using that wearable, preferably in AR glasses, more than I'm actually using my smartphone. I would like to be that to be my primary interface, my digital assistant. And once again, we're getting there. Meta is one of the companies leading the charge. They've got solutions both based on Qualcomm's VR solution, and they introduced their own chipset that they're working on called Orion. That's a distributed chipset solution for AR at Hot Chips earlier this year. So I think I think we're on that cusp. And this is the challenge, I think, with each new technology. It usually takes 2 to 3 generations and that usually translates into 5 to 7 years before a technology really takes off. And, you know, we saw this with tablets. We saw this with DVD players. We've seen this with just about everything. And it's because the rest of the ecosystem and the rest of the technology has to evolve. You have to have the technology, you have to have the content, you have to have the business models, and they all have to gel to come together. And I kind of think we're on that cusp, you know, with display technology, with silicon technology, with hopefully business models, and definitely with content coming. I think eventually we're going to get there. Hopefully by the end of the decade, we're going to see the solutions that we all hope for.
Can I just piggyback on something Jim just said? Because I think it's a great point. As you can hear, Jim and I are sort of on the same page with the AR and the glasses sort of format. And Jim's totally right. You know, it takes 5 to 7 years for tech to typically grab hold of the markets and take off. The one other huge advantage to the inconspicuous sort of glasses form factor is it's also a fashion statement, right? So you potentially may see people buying 5, 6, 7 different pairs because it goes with a different outfit. It goes with a different suit. It's for a different environment. You know, some are for professional environments, some for sports. And like that's something, a tablet or a smartphone, you hit saturation point and people just sort of get bored. And then the upgrade cycles go from 1 year to 3 years to 5 years. with something like, you know, AR glasses, with the same exact specs, a new style might spur, you know, people to buy. So it's a really interesting market with lots of potential in that regard. Right.
Yes, the one thing we need to remember is don't let engineers do the design.
No, do not.
Or the naming. They suck at both. So let's just face it. And I are an engineer, so I say that honestly.
So thanks, Jim, for insulting every person who has an engineering degree at the clients that we work with. That's really good. That's really good for business, and we do appreciate that. We'll have to
Mark,
end it
they,
there.
They know to stick in their lane.
Yeah. Yeah, when they play this clip in front of us, I'll remember that, Marco. So we probably should end it there. We'll give Marco some time to call the police and find out why Dave is looking through his window right now. But guys, thanks again for your time. For our viewing audience, follow us on X, and please like and subscribe to the Tech Stack Podcast via the QR codes you're about to see. Please make sure that you visit us on the technologies.net to watch all of our Tech Stack episodes, and have a great weekend.